I had to be reminded when one of our younger, newer experienced, newer young people is currently experiencing what it's like to go without eating for a whole day. And when you're young, your metabolism is running pretty high. And I thought I was going to die the first time I did it when I was about 12 years old. But I didn't die. And actually, it's very good for you as far as your system is concerned. Help purge your system out and give you a kind of a fresh start. But the younger you are, the more difficult it is. But you survive, you learn the purpose of the day, and that's what we're here to review. Because we're not doing this just for fun. We're not going without food. We're not coming here to services because we are trying to make points with God. We're here because we want to learn more about God's plan and what it is that the great God has in store for us and what he wants us to be doing. And he reveals all of the plan that he has for us through the holy days, and he reminds us of it every year. And it's very important for us to understand the meaning of this particular day, as it is all the other holy days. But this day is a special day in the sense that the evil influence that we are surrounded with, we know that the Bible says that this world is under the control of Satan the devil, and God has allowed that. He is the God of this world, and he is constantly pulling the wool over everybody's eyes and twisting things around and trying to get people to go in the wrong direction. And this is the day when that evil influence, as we heard in the sermonette, is going to go away. It's going to be removed, finally. Now, human beings have their own, we have our own human carnal nature, selfishness, greed, envy, strife, all these things that are part of the human being's, let's say, tendencies. Now, they can be overcome, they can be repented of, and they can be resisted and changed, and our thinking can become like God. But that takes some time, and it certainly takes God's Spirit. However, right now, the world, the poor world, the society we live in, and our friends and the people we work with out there in society, they don't even understand and realize what's bugging them. They don't realize what's causing them to have the troubles that they are having and some of the pain that they're suffering. Because they will tell you, well, they said if I did so-and-so, it was going to work out really good, and it didn't. And that's, of course, always the way it works with Satan's system. He makes it look really good, but the results aren't too good. The end is not good. And so we're here to commemorate the day that Christ returns, or after he returns, and on the Day of Trumpets. He's not going to necessarily come back right on the Day of Trumpets. Only the Father knows what time and date that is going to be. But that the next thing he's going to do is to get rid of Satan's influence. He's going to remove evil. Now that is going to lift a huge burden off of this world. And so we are to be reminded that Satan is going to be removed, because he's the source of that evil deception. It's kind of interesting here. Well, we know in Revelation 12:9 that Satan's deceived the whole world. I've mentioned that over and over. We need to keep remembering that. And we need to realize where that source is, where it comes from, and exactly what was mentioned in the sermonette, that God's promised to protect us. Christ prayed to protect us because we need to be protected. You remember the example that Christ gave when he looked at Peter and he said, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. In other words, do whatever he wants with you. But I have prayed for you. And that's all he had to say. We know the hedge that was put around Job, and Satan mocked it before God. And if you read that example, you see his very resentful, sarcastic attitude towards the Father. And basically what he was saying is, yeah, well, you're protected. You wouldn't let me get at him. You know, you're not fair, God. Now, just give me a chance to really get in there and stir him up some, you know, a little bit, and you'll see what he does. That's a very critical and, disrespectful attitude towards the Father, to say the least. I want to answer, before we go any further, how in the world did Satan get this way? How did that happen? Well, let's just read God's description here. Let's go back to Isaiah 14. My notes don't blow away here on me. Because that has to be a question everybody asks. How in the world did this evil force come into existence? Where did it come from and why is it? Because Satan didn't start out that way, brethren, as you probably know. Isaiah 14, these are just some glimpses into the background way, way before man was ever on this earth, before man was created. Verse 11 in chapter 14 of Isaiah, your pomp is brought down to the grave. Now, he's using at the same time, it's kind of a combination here, description of this king, of a human being, but nonetheless, it ends up referring to Satan, and that becomes very clear. Your pomp is brought down to the grave. In other words, it's going to end. And the noise of the violas and the and all the good things, it's going to go away. The worm is spread under you, and the worms cover you. In other words, that's when things begin, are dead, and things begin to decay. And then verse 12, how are you fallen from heaven? So obviously, Satan was in heaven. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? And how are you cut down? How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? In other words, he attacked the nations. Now, he deceived the nations, and he told them, oh, if you do this and you do that, and influenced and inspired them, well, then things will be better. And they did this and they did that, and things didn't get better, they got worse. And that was part of his trick. His objective, as I've said before, is to present this world to Christ as he returns as a smoking cinder. But that's not going to happen. Christ is going to return before that takes place. Now God says in verse 13, for you have said in your heart. Now he didn't start out this way, but he became this way. I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. He's going to be on God's holy mountain. He's going to take charge. That was what he decided was best for him. He says, because as God said, he said this in his heart. He had this motivation, this desire. I will ascend, verse 14, above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. In other words, I'm going to be God. I'm going to take over. Because I don't like what's going on around here. And I don't think that God is capable of continuing to do this. I think we need some new management here. And I certainly, he said to himself, am capable of doing this. Yet you shall bring down or be brought down to hell to the sides of the pit, and talks about what we know is going to transpire on this particular day when Satan is removed from his responsibility or his seat of power. And I'm not going to read any more of this. Let's go on to Ezekiel, the 28th chapter, and gives more of an insight into Satan's attitude and how he got into this thing. I mean, this is a being that was created by God, perfect. Ezekiel 28 and verse 11. Because we have to see what Satan's attitude was. How did he begin thinking like this? He didn't start out that way. Chapter 28, verse 1, the word of the Lord came again to me, saying, Son of man, he's talking about the king of Tyre. And in verse 2, he says, because your heart was lifted up, and you have said, I am a God, I sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas, yet you are a man and not God. And then he's talking to the king, but this is the attitude, of course, Satan had. And he inspired this man, to this king, to think the same way. Though you are set, though you set your heart as the heart of God. All right, let's start here in verse 11, because I started too soon there, actually. Verse 6 says that he wanted to be God as well. He says, because in your heart you set yourself to be God. And verse 11, moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying to Ezekiel the prophet, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus says the Lord, you seal up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Now, he goes on to say something here that no man being described here could have been, and certainly the king of Tyre was not there in verse 13. You have been in Eden. Now, we know that Satan was allowed to visit and deceive the two human beings that God created. You've been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone. Now, this is God's description of what he gave to Satan. Every precious stone was your covering. And he lists off a whole list of different precious stones here, all the way down towards the bottom of the verse there, ending with gold. He said, the workmanship of your tabrets and of your pipes was prepared in you. In other words, you see that Satan certainly could produce beautiful music. And he uses that today to lead people in the wrong direction as well. But that's another story. But that's just another one of his tools. In the day that you were created, so when God created Satan, he gave him all these things. I mean, he didn't have anything to complain about. He said, you are the anointed, verse 14, cherub that covers, and I have set you so. The Father put him in that position. You were upon the holy mountain of God that we heard in the hymn. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created, there's a problem, until iniquity was found in you. Until he began to think that he, well, until, let's put it this way in modern terminology, until he got too big for his britches, as they say. he began to really think he was something. In fact, he didn't just think he was something. And not only am I as good, but I'm better. By the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence, and you have sinned. Therefore, I will cast you as profane out of the mountains of God, and I will destroy you, and O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up. Now, this is something that all of us have to be aware of, because we all have pride and we all have vanity, and we have to be alert to it. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness. I will cast you to the ground, and I will lay you before the kings that they may behold you. And then goes on and describes that people are going to be seeing what happens to Satan, and they're going to be shocked because of the power that he exhibits, especially towards the end of this age, when he deceives these nations and he gets the beast and the false prophet, and they're doing miracles and they're bringing fire down out of heaven. So much so, Christ said, that that even the elect would be like, wow, that's pretty impressive. And it's going to be impressive. Thankfully, I mean, we all want Christ to return, but it's not going to be pleasant in between now and the time he does. It's not going to be too enjoyable. Notice Luke, the 10th chapter here. This is, here's Jesus Christ talking to his disciples and to the others there. And it's an interesting comment. When you put it together with what we just read, and the fact that God said, I will cast you out, Luke, the 10th chapter, and if I'm reading this correctly, verse 17, and the 70, he had sent them out, he said, and there's a lesson here as well, and the 70 returned again with joy, saying to Christ, even the devils or even the demons are subject to us through your name. And that continues on today. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. I saw Satan get kicked out of heaven, and it was like lightning coming down out of heaven. Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. Now, Satan is referred to as our enemy in many cases. And nothing shall by any means hurt you. Notwithstanding this, don't rejoice over that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven, in the book of life. I could tell you many, many stories of how God fulfilled that promise in some of the places that we had to visit out there in Newark and Jersey City and Elizabeth. And these are all just names to you, but they were bad places. Bad, bad places. And if God hadn't protected us, we would have been toast. Anyway, it was very obvious that God did. Now, we had to be careful, and we had to be follow certain guidelines. But certainly, I could tell you many times when God obviously protected us, because he promised to do that. But that's not what we need to be rejoicing over. God just protects us so that we can do the work. The thing that we need to be thankful and grateful for is the fact that our names are written in the book of life. And we are the ones looking forward to this, what this day is going to bring about, and that is the removal of Satan and his influence. Now let's go back to, I won't take time to read Revelation 12. I'll just refer to it, and that is that we know that Satan was a pretty good salesman. Obviously, he was very, very convinced of his capabilities and his greatness and his wonderfulness. And one of his key factors, one of the key, principles that he uses to try to, or used to try to convince the angels to follow him instead of God, was God's not fair. This is not fair. Look. You know, he's in charge, and we just have to do whatever he says. And whatever other arguments he skillfully came up with. But he was able to convince one-third, a whole third of the angels. Now, we don't know how many angels there are, but we know that Revelation 12 says that he drew a third part of the stars or of the angels with him. And they're on this earth going around seeking whom they may devour. That's their objective. We need God's protection. When God's protection was removed, that hedge was removed that we heard about in the sermonette in chapter 3 of Genesis, and the serpent or the devil was allowed to come in and throw out his sales pitch, his deception. He is very, very good at tricking people. And if you and I aren't alert, and if we aren't close to God, and if we aren't asking for God, more of God's Spirit on a daily basis, and having God's mind and his perception and his wisdom, then we're going to, if we trust ourselves, we're not going to get very far. Because look what happened to Eve here. Now the serpent, verse 1 of chapter 3, was more subtle. Now you've seen, you know, you hear the old stories about the subtle salesman or the high pressure guy or whatever, or the guy that can sell the refrigerators to the Eskimos. You know how that goes. Well, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. Well, it's not just any beast, which the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, okay, so he's presenting himself in the form of this serpent. And he's talking to the woman, which should have been a clue right there, like, who are you? I've never met you before. But he was subtle. So whatever method he used to open the conversation must have been pretty effective, because if you're in the garden and you've been there with just you and your husband, you and Adam, and you're taking care of the garden, and all of a sudden this other person or being or whatever starts talking to you, that's going to be rather strange. So whatever he did to present himself, he started a conversation. He says, in verse he said unto the woman, yea, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Now that is a really good sales approach, because every person that is in sales or marketing knows that you have to answer the objections. And if you can answer the objections ahead of time and bring up the problem ahead of time and answer them before the people can worry about it, then you get a step ahead. So he did the same game here. And so he just quoted God. He said, well, didn't God say that you cannot eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman, well, now she's agreeing with him. Well, the woman said to the serpent, we may not eat of the fruit of the tree of the garden. But of the fruit, or all of the, we can eat everything we want except, in verse 3, for the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden. And God said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you're not going to really die. And the truth was, you're not going to die right now. For God does know, okay, so look, you have to understand that God's got a motive here. He's got an underlying reason. He doesn't want you touching that tree because once you do, then you're going to be as smart as he is. And he doesn't want that. He wants to keep you ignorant. You shall not surely die, for God does know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes are going to be open, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. You see, he's not fair. He's playing a joke. He's playing a trick on you. And he's conning you, and he's keeping you away from the good stuff. Don't let him bamboozle you like that. That's a big fat lie that God's telling you. And when the woman saw, she took a look at that tree and she said, well, it looks like it was good for food. And it was pleasant to the eyes and the tree to be desired to make one wise. She took the fruit and she ate it. And she gave it to her husband. And he did eat also. And later in the New Testament it says she was deceived, but Adam wasn't. He went along with it. And the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked, and so on and so forth. And we know the rest of the story. Now God, in verse 8, when they heard, he says, and they heard the voice of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and Eve hid themselves from the presence of the Lord. And the Lord, verse 9, called out to him and said, where are you? And he said, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, well, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree whereof I commanded you that you should not eat? And then he goes through the scenario. Human nature now takes over. And he starts blaming, it's the old joke. Well, the wife gave it to me, and then the wife says, well, a snake told me it was good to eat, and the snake didn't have a leg to stand on. That's as old as the hills. But anyway, the bottom line is they got bagged, okay? They were tricked, they were deceived, and they bought it. Now, Satan is very good at it. And if you don't have God's help, and we don't have God's protection, we're going to be like the rest of the world. We're going to get bagged too. You know what I mean by that. It's just we're going to be deceived. And we'll fall into the trap. And they did. And now they're reaping the reward of their decision. But that was the first deception of man on the earth. And it has gone on from there. And it finally got to the point, not that long after, when God said man was just thinking of evil continually, and he said, I'm going to have to wipe the slate clean here and start over. And he did that with Noah. So it's just we have to understand this, but God's going to remove that evil. And that's what this day, one of the main things that this day represents. But there's another aspect as well, which we will get to as we go along. Let's go to Matthew, the 13th chapter, because this is further support in the New Testament. Matthew 13. And we can read about the sower in verse 18. He said, well, and actually in verse 16, And prior to that, he talks about the why he spoke in parables, because he knew that these people wouldn't understand, they wouldn't fully perceive, and that Satan would be right there to trick them. So they have their eyes closed. And verse 16, he says, and this is where we are, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear and have not heard them. They knew, they got inklings of what was coming in the future, but God had not yet fully revealed it to them. And then verse 18, he gives an example to his disciples. Hear you therefore the parable of the sower. Now this is a really good example of how Satan deals with mankind here. He said, and of course human nature as well, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and doesn't understand it, then comes the wicked one. So they hear it and they don't quite understand, and they may want to learn more, but immediately Satan comes along and catches away that which was sown in his heart. Now, I had an example of that. This friend of mine from high school that I'd gone to high school with, and when I came back after, I think it was one semester of Ambassador College, and he was asking me all these questions, and I was explaining things to him. And he was really excited about it, and it all began to make sense. Then he went home and he talked to his mother. And the next time when I talked to him, it was gone. Perfect. It was a perfect example of this. He says, This is he which received the seed by the wayside. But he that received the seed in stony places, the same is he that hears the word, and he gets all excited, and he's all joyful, and he receives it. Yet he doesn't have any root. Now this is why we in the ministry emphasize, and why the Bible emphasizes, you have to have a sound foundation. You have to prove all things. You have to know what you believe. This has to be a deep personal relationship between you and God. It might look good, and it might seem, oh man, I understand, this is great, wonderful. Yet he doesn't have a good solid foundation in himself. Maybe he didn't take the time to really thoroughly prove these things. But he endures just for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, pretty soon he's offended. He gets offended for whatever reason. In other words, those physical things are bigger to that person than God's way. In other words, I don't care what other people do. I'm going to do what God says. Verse 22, and he also received another one received it among the thorns. He is the one that hears the word, and the care of this world. Now, the care of this world is pretty strong, my friends. It's called survival. It's called being successful. It's called being able to, drive a nice car, have a nice house, take care of your family, feed yourself, be looked up to as far as respect in the society. The cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches. Now, there's nothing wrong with having money or wealth, as long as it doesn't become more important to you than God. As soon as it becomes more important than God, and that then becomes your God, and that drives you in what you're doing, now it's a curse to you. It's a deceitful thing. It looks like that's the thing you should be running after and sacrificing for, But the results are pretty empty. And the deceitfulness of riches choke the word out, so it begins to take your life over. Brethren, I've gone down that trail in business. And business, I tell you, is an exciting experience. If you're doing what you enjoy, and if you're doing what you're good at, and the company that you're working for example, recognizes that, and they reward you for what you do, and the more you do, the more you receive, and it becomes like a disease. And you have to control that. And to help me control that, God let me get locked in the freezer. But that's a... I never gave you that story, did I? Well, let me tell you, that gets your attention. And that's another story. But you, when you're looking at life and death, okay, with a gun pointing at you, you realize that there are only a couple things important in life. First is God. Second is your family. All the rest doesn't make any difference. Right then, you really don't care how big your paycheck is. You don't care what kind of car you're driving or what kind of a house you're living in. Those are the things that are the most important to us. And sometimes God has to use, and I'm sorry to say I've had to be the recipient of the 2x4 from him a few times, get my attention. Because it says, the care of the world and the deceitfulness of riches, the so-called opportunities and all these things are so attractive, and it's like drugs or whatever. I mean, I've heard people interviewed that they would rather just, they don't care about their family, they don't want to even be married, they just want to work. They want to be doing this thing because it is so exciting. I've experienced that. But it doesn't hold a candle to what we understand. He said, the care of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes, or he becomes, that person becomes unfruitful. Why? Because that begins to take the place of importance in your life instead of God. But he that receives the seed in the good ground with balance, with wisdom, with understanding, and seeing what is the most important thing in his life, in his or her life, is he that hears the word and understands it. He gets the point. He understands it, which also bears fruit and brings forth some hundredfold, some 60, some 30. And then he talks about the tares. And without having to go through this whole thing again, the sower goes out, sows the seed. But verse 25, but while the men slept, his enemy, guess who that is, came and he sowed the tares among the wheat and went his way. And then they woke up and the plant started coming up, and it was like, whoa, wait a minute, I never sowed those, but somebody threw the tares or the weeds in there. And God says in verse 29, Christ said, but he said, nay, he said, you know, they wanted to go out and gather them up. He said, no, verse 29, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up the wheat with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. Now that's a very interesting statement. Let them both grow until the harvest. We have to endure the tares as far as the world. We're living in that environment. And God is not ready to make that separation right now. Lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Verse 30, but let them both grow together until the harvest. And in the harvest time, I will say to the reapers, gather you together first the tares and bind them in bundles and burn them but gather the wheat into my barn. So then he talks about the mustard seed and so on. All kinds of very interesting examples. It's just that you can see that the enemy, Satan the devil, is being depicted here in these parables as the one who is right there to deceive us. And we have to be on guard, and we have to be alert, and we have to see the picture clearly. Because if we don't, then we're going to be sucked up with the rest of the world, and we'll begin to follow the wrong god. It's called our own desires, and, you know, whatever, you know, the deceitfulness of riches or whatever. Again, there's nothing wrong with being successful. There's nothing wrong with having success and money and whatever, as long as that does not become our motivation in life. That God is always ahead of that, because we know God's servants in the past were very, very blessed by God and very, very wealthy. But they were converted, and they never let those physical things become more important to them than God. So we know that the world is blinded. They can't see, and they're being deceived, and they don't even know it. Obviously, when you're deceived, you don't know you're deceived. So when people get their eyes open, and Christ removes, first of all, reveals who the evil one is on this day, and then turns around and shows mankind the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, because two things are going to happen. He's going to remove the evil, that's number one, and number two, at the same time, that's the example there in Leviticus 16, where it talks about the two goats, because God is going to present, he's going to present Satan and remove him and send him into restraint. But at the same time, he's also going to present the sacrifice of Jesus Christ for the people. And what he means by saying that is that that sacrifice then will be available to those who are receptive to God's way, which will be made very clear to them for the first time in their life. And they'll see this whole picture and they'll realize, I've been tricked. I've been deceived. I've been bamboozled. I ain't going to be happy about it. And they're going to be saying, as we read there, or as I referred to in Isaiah 2, they're going to go up to the mountain of the Lord and say, let's go up there and let's get taught God's way. Because they know that's where they can find the truth. And it's going to be throughout the whole earth. Truth will be around everywhere. Right now, deception is around everywhere. So let's go back here to Matthew 4. This is just a fairly short depiction of how Christ overcame Satan. We know that Christ fasted for 40 days. It wasn't a partial fast, it was the real thing. So if you think you're hungry after a few hours, well, Christ was a little more hungry than we are right now. And it made him vulnerable. Because when you're in a weakened condition like that physically, you don't have natural resistance. Verse 1 of chapter 4, then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness. And he was led up there to be tempted of the devil. He was allowed to have Satan try to tempt him. And verse 2, and when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights and was afterwards and hungered, that I would say an understatement. We're not going to die after one day of fasting. People live for quite a long time without eating. Verse 3, and when the tempter the enemy, Satan, came to him and he said, if you be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. Well, that'd be a tempting idea if you haven't eaten for about 40 days. But he answered and said to him, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. I'm not here to, Christ said, to follow after the physical. I'm here to follow what God says. And verse 5, then the devil took him up. Now, this is the power. This shows you the power that Satan currently has and the authority that he has, because he is the god of this world, and God's allowing, the Father is allowing that. Then the devil took him up into the holy city, and he set him up on the pinnacle of the temple. And he said to him, if you be the Son of God, just throw yourself down there. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and their hands, and they will bear you up, and lest at any time you should dash your foot against a stone. And Jesus said to him, it is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. Now, you'd have to see the whole, be there and really deeply understand the whole scenario of why this situation was a very tempting thing. And of course, I'm sure there's not recorded here all of the conversation and all of the reasoning that Satan was trying to throw at Christ. And Christ and Jesus said, it is written, you shall not tempt the Lord your God, in verse 7. And again, the devil takes him up on a very, very high mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. You join me and you let me be the boss, I'll give you all these things. And then Jesus said to him, get out of here. I'll just say that I'm sure he said it stronger than that. For it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. And then the devil left. And behold, the angels came and ministered to him. There's a whole lot more that took place in that conversation, but this is the kind of the synopsis of what transpired there. It wasn't quite, I'm sure, that simple. But it just shows you the power and the authority that Satan has on this earth right now. He has the authority to give people lots of power. And then, of course, they use it to serve Satan in his way rather than God's way. Well, let's go to Revelation 20 and realize clearly what's going to happen on this day. And it's going to be after a lot of pain and a lot of suffering takes place, because people will be trying to fight against Christ as he comes back. Many things will transpire, but this will be the end of the evil influence that we have to live with every day. In verse chapter 20 of Revelation, I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the keys to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. Now, all this is symbolic, of course. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent. Now, if you wondered these different names, if you wondered who God's talking about here, he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and he bound him for 1,000 years, and he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more until the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he's going to be loosed for a little season. And that gets into another story, which I'm not going to get into right now, but that is becoming slowly but surely clearer and clearer to me why so many people will follow Satan for that short duration. But anyway, again, that's another story. The biggest thing is when you go back to Leviticus 16, it emphasizes the fact that there were the two goats, one goat representing Satan, who was not killed, but sent out into the wilderness where there was no one. In other words, he was separated from everyone, which is exactly what it says here in Revelation. And at the same time, the other goat was sacrificed, which represented Jesus Christ, sacrifice, which is offered for us if we repent and if we accept that sacrifice. But I'd like you to also keep in mind something else. I'd like you to go to 1 Peter, since we're back here in Revelation. Go back a few pages. 1 Peter, the 5th chapter. And this is similar to what we heard, what was quoted from James here in the sermonette. Because Peter understood the same thing. Peter had dealt with demons, casting out demons. He'd seen Christ do it. He'd seen what Satan tried to do. He'd seen the power and the influence that they could have on people. And he knew it was a real thing. And he said, verse 6, 1 Peter 5, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Cast all of your care upon him, for he cares for you. This is what I try to remind everyone, all of us. I try to remind myself this as well, because people in God's church go through tests, so we go through trials. And these are all things that help strengthen our faith. But we have to keep remembering that the Father in heaven says, I care for you. You cast your cares upon him. You trust God to take care of it. How he's going to do it? Well, he knows how he's going to do it. He just wants to know if we are willing to trust him for it. And then he'll do it. And we all go, oh, wow, I never thought that would happen. I didn't expect that to work out that way. Well, that's because we're not God. Verse 8, be sober. Now it says, we just read it, we need to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God. In other words, submit ourselves to him. And be sober and be alert. Keep your eyes open. Don't, you know, be taking life easy and just going along. He said, you be vigilant. When you are, if you're a hunter, for example, I haven't been able to do any hunting for quite a number of years, but I certainly enjoyed it when I did it. You can't be banging and crashing through the woods if you're going out to hunt deer. You have to be vigilant. You have to be quiet. You have to be careful. You have to keep your eyes open for movement and so on. And usually you want to find a good deer trail. And you scout it out about a month ahead of time, and you find out where the deer run is, and you find out where what we call the buck rubs are, where the buck usually has his own little trail, and he's rubbed on these trees, and you can tell the size of his horns by the size of the tree. And it gets rather interesting and complicated sometimes. And you want to find a good stand. And then you go out there at about 4 or 5 in the morning before it gets light, and you're waiting for the old boy before sunrise, because you know where he's going to be, or at least you have a good idea. And you have to be vigilant. That's what he's talking about. You better be sober, take this seriously, and you better keep your eyes open. Be alert, because the first thing Christ said is don't be deceived by these people. And that's one of the things that's constantly going to be out there. Satan is trying to deceive us. And he started out with Adam and Eve. Because your adversary, the enemy, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour, looking for people, as I've told you, in New York with the sunburned tongues, looking up at the buildings, going, look at that tall building. And the people that are the muggers, that's what they're looking for. Non-vigilant people. Easy prey. If you've ever, the first time I ever heard a lion roar in the zoo just about freaked me out. I mean, those things are loud. And if you're out in the jungle with no protection and the lion is roaring, it gets your attention. And he's telling you something. I'm hungry and I'm looking for you. And that's why he uses this description. The devil, he's like a roaring lion. He's insatiable. He's looking and seeking, and his demons are looking and seeking for people who are easy prey, because his desire is to destroy man. Not perpetuate man, but destroy man. Now, he says, just like James did, whom you should resist, I'm putting extra words in here, but whom resist steadfast by staying close to God, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions, it's nothing new, this has been going on since the beginning of mankind. In fact, it started way before mankind was ever created, when Satan got the big idea that he was bigger than God and he should take over. And he convinced a third of the angels, hey boys, look at God's not, he's not very fair. Look at all these things. We could do this. We could do that. Big trick. And they bought it. And they all got cast out of heaven down to earth. That's where they are now. Waiting for this time to take place. Whom you resist, being steadfast in faith, staying close to God, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Everybody who is our brethren around this world is going through the same thing. You're not an exception. Satan is there trying his best to trick us if he can. But if we stay close to God, Christ promises to take care of us. And he said, when I return, my first official action is going to be to get rid of evil and to offer mankind Christ's sacrifice if they're willing to follow my way. It's a pretty good deal. And it's going to be a huge relief. And talks about that back in the prophets there. I believe it's in Ezekiel where it says, and the earth was at peace. It was quiet. It was nice. Right now, we lock our doors. We worry about some crazy people who want to behead people for starting up some crazy attack on this country. They've already tried it over in Australia. It's already happened in Oklahoma. If you think this is the end, well, think again. Christ said it's only the beginning of sorrows. And we are living in fear of, we're not living in fear if we're trusting God, but the world is living in fear of what could happen next. If these crazies get an atomic bomb of any kind or any kind of thing, you know, their main target is New York City. They would just love to take that Freedom Tower and blow it up again. Watch it fall over. I watched those things, those towers come down on TV. I was incensed. I watched it happen on television. I have been many times, and my wife with me, and other guests who came to visit the church area there, and we would take them to New York City, and we would take them to the observation tower and on the first tower, and then we would go into the second tower, and there was a restaurant up in the top, and you had to have the right dress and so on to get in. And we had that all figured out ahead of time. But I've been in both places. I've been there many times. And when I saw that happen, I can't describe how angry I was. I was ready to do whatever. But you have to back off, because that's God's job, and he will take care of it. But if you think that's the last, well, it's not going to be the last. What is going to happen? I don't know exactly. But certainly things are continuing to move down the track of prophecy, just as Jesus Christ said. It moves us closer to the time when evil will be removed. But between now and then, it's going to be a tough time. And all the warnings of staying close to God, keeping your faith, not letting the society and the world deviate us, get us off the track, always understanding what's the most important. It's good to participate. We need to work hard. We need to be successful. We need to educate ourselves. We need to do all those things. That's fine. But if that causes you to diminish your relationship with God, that's what you have to be vigilant about. And that's where we have to be alert, because it's very easy to happen. I can tell you from experience. And it's just something that Satan will keep throwing out there at us to try to get us off the track. So I wish all of you a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles, which is going to be a representation of what we're looking forward to once evil is removed and we're able to now offer the truth to the world that has never seen it, that never has understood it. And we need to be learning the things that we need to learn now and to stay vigilant, which God is, you know, using to teach us these things. And he is educating us. And people will say, well, I'm not qualified to be a king or a priest or a teacher. Well, don't worry about that. God, if you and I understand God's principles, we've gone through some of these things, and we understand God's way is the only way, and we are learning to think like God thinks, we will be ready to do that job. And we'll be there, as Christ said, on the mountain. And those people said, well, we can go up there and we'll get taught. Well, who's going to do the teaching? We're going to do the teaching. And we'll be representatives of God. And we'll have to understand how God thinks. And we have to be an accurate representative of his, which we are being trained to do. That's what we're called to do, not just to save our skin and say, oh, I hope I make it into the kingdom. Well, I hope you're thinking a little bigger than that. I hope you're realizing that we aren't being called just to make it ourselves, but to share what we have with the rest of the world, which will be pretty exciting. And you all respond exactly the same way. I respond the same way. Anybody new comes and we're like, oh boy, this is great. Because we want to share what we have. And we know that it's that not everybody wants to listen to it. In fact, nobody wants to listen to it. But God's teaching us so that we can share. And then those people, they're going to come and they're going to want, tell me. I've been tricked all my life. I've been deceived. I thought this, I thought that. What's the truth? And we'll be able to sit down and tell them. That's going to be quite an experience. But that's what we're getting trained to do. That's our objective, not just to make it ourselves, but to be prepared to share and to give what God is giving us the opportunity to learn now.